Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
UCY.TV radio listeners, this is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Thank you for joining me. Today is Tuesday, November 29th. We're almost done. I keep saying that. I just can't believe we're at the end of 2016, and it feels as if everything is transformed, but we are still in the quagmire of nuclear pollution, folks. And they seem to just completely forget about it. I mean, I have people on interviewing. Now I have the opportunity to do this 5 days a week. Many of you know Kevin Blanch quit his show. Drew Kuhn got super busy and could not do the quality of program he wanted. So I picked up the slack. It seems to work for me 5 days a week. So I'm going to fill out this time with information. Like today, the format of the show is going to change. I'll be on 5 days a week from 8 to 9. Monday through Friday. I'm not going to set a pattern of anything so that I can be flexible with people who want to interview. Since I have a 5 day a week format, I do hope that Dana Dernfer will come on. And in keeping with what I said on the beginning of my intro, love is greater than fear, and we want to give venue to all voices here. Dana Dernfer did a video yesterday denouncing Helen Caldicott, and he's mad at people who still support her because she's soft-pedaling it. I don't know if he'll come on my show because I want to give Helen a chance. I want to talk to her. I want to see. This is the weird thing about doing this radio show, folks. We're alternative. People don't even call me back. The show is the Age of Fission radio show. Carl Grossman calls me back. We have delightful interviews. I mean, he is and has been an anti-nuke activist for a long time. So anyways, as we go on, I'm going to explain to you how the show goes because you'll see. Today, I have a bunch of articles put together. And I have on the five nuclear sites that just, boom, popped into my head. Now, doesn't that actually piss you off? It does me that I have to even know about this, that this is even happening, that our government, the people we've been paying our taxes to all these many years since they discovered this toxin, have just been lying to us 100%. And I get it. But this is where I disagree with Dana, and I'm going to just say this quickly. Despots do not leave if you threaten to put them in jail. They go with golden handcuffs. We need these scientists to come forward and say, yeah, we sort of did sell you out. Yeah, we know. But this is the argument with Helen Caldicott. This is the thing. She knows better, really, in lots of ways. She should be much more vociferous. And I bet you 2-1, her life has been threatened in not uncertain terms. These people are murderers. They're murdering our children, for God's sakes. You think they care if they murder whistleblowers? So these are the stories that I have. Bridgeton landfill fills household settlement with nearby households. September 23rd, 2016. I actually did not get a chance to really cover this. I got to talk about it, but I thought I'd read you this story. I believe that St. Louis is the biggest, the worst event in our country. We have people living next door to a fuse wrap slash nuclear burning dump site. They can call it a smoldering event. It's the smoldering that harms, the smoke, the gas, it's the fumes that's coming out. It goes everywhere. Yeah, it dissipates, but that stuff is toxic for 25 miles. That's the reality. This is an outrage. And one of the reasons I love Helen Caldicott is she went to St. Louis and said that to them. So I'm going to read this story. It's 8:06. I'm going to keep mindful of the time. I'm also going to discuss the abandoned uranium mines that everybody's forgetting about. I have an article on Hanford, of course, the WIPP, Indian Point, which they're calling America's Fukushima. I don't think so. Let's just talk about WIPP. I mean, it's almost like who wants to have that title? And then the two leaking nuclear power plants in Illinois, which the NRDC, Natural Resource Defense Fund, has worked with the Illinois legislature to keep those plants open so that they can keep their coal program going. They want to go anti-coal, so let's just keep those nuclear power plants flowing. Because the nuclear industry says it's not a danger. So when the nuclear industry says that, look what happens here. Bridgeton landfill settlement with 34 households. And I'm just going to read this. This is by Bryce Gray, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And I'm reading this for people who cannot get to this, do not have access to the internet, or do not have this story available. It is a huge story. The operators of the Bridgeton landfill reached a settlement with 34 separate homeowners in the vicinity of the waste facility Friday for, quote, alleged loss of use or employment of their property as a result of the subsurface reaction, unquote, at the site. These cases brought forth by the 34 individual households were consolidated in court. News of the agreement was confirmed in a press release from the Bridgeton Landfill LLC, a subsidiary of the Phoenix-based waste management company, Republic Services. So if you live anywhere near Arizona, you need to be calling these people. Terms of the settlement are not being publicly disclosed, according to the statement. Oh, yeah, we know what they are. They can't talk. They get money, but they can't talk. The subsurface reaction, that's in quotes, the quote, subsurface reaction, unquote. The reason they put this, it's a fire. Mentioned in the announcement refers to the underground fire smoldering in the absence of oxygen, 60 to 180 feet below the landfill surface. I'm going to read that again. The subsurface reaction mentioned in the announcement refers to the underground fire smoldering in the absence of oxygen, 60 to 80 feet below the landfill surface. The reaction was initially detected in late 2010 and contributed to the worsening odor problem, which landfill officials say peaked in 2013 and 14. Oh, it's just the problem with the odor, that's all. It also incited widespread concern about the proximity to the radioactive waste contained in the adjacent Westlake landfill. Wow. This is good writing. If you guys understood the politics of nuclear, this guy is doing a really excellent job. According to landfill officials, the reaction is currently moving at a rate of about 6 inches per day and is in one of the areas of the landfill farthest from Westlake. The release also referenced past settlements of landfill operators reached in 2014 with the majority of affected neighbors. Quote, majority is in quotes, the majority. In addition to the settlements, Republic Services say that it has spent more than $200 million to combat the subsurface fire, a process which is ongoing. There's going to continue to be an odor challenge until the reaction self-extinguishes, says Russ Nock, Republic Services Vice President of Communication and Public Affairs, during a recent description of activities at the site. Why doesn't that guy quit? Why doesn't he not be that person that has the nerve to say this? Wow. Thank you, Bryce. Oh, my gosh. So anyways, you guys, that is what's going on in Westlake. It's at the, these are 34 families. Let me get to this other story. I'm going to open this in a new link since we have time. I thought this would take about 15 minutes, but I contained myself with the comments here and there. Bridgeton Landfill Odor Settlement is approved. This is from Blythe Bernard at bbernard@postdispatch.com. This was posted August 4th, 2014. Wow. So anyways, I'm not going to read this. This is about this. I think what I'll do is at the end of this, if I get through all these stories, I'm going to go to the Facebook page and look at their posts that they currently have. I suggest everybody go to the Westlake Landfill page, and also, you know what? You guys should actually follow this newspaper. Just go online to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and find their C.D. Stelzer, find this guy Bryce Gray. You can, you know, contact them and be follow their stories on their page, because they post a lot of things that don't get in the newspaper. And a lot of that has to do with the politics of nuclear, which everybody listening to this fully understands. And that's exactly why I'm not about to throw Helen Caldicott under the bus, even though she's serious. I get it. It's seriously soft pedal. But is going the other way, making her life hell, making her children's life hell, going to change what they're going to do, change the effects? She is warning people of the catastrophic events. So I don't know if Dana will still talk to me after this, because he's got a hot temper. So anyways, I'm going to move on to this next story, which is a hidden story. I have mentioned it again. This is the press release. I think I read this before. EPA awards Navajo Abandoned Mine Lands Program $328,000. That is nothing to help assist EPA. This is outrageous. To help assist the EPA in the cleanup of abandoned uranium mines on the Navajo Nation. $328,000 won't do jack even on one mine. Wow. This is why we have abandoned mines, because nobody's paying the money to go do it. You think the Trump Nation will? Yeah. So let's move on. Hanford. Hanford is 15 miles away from the Columbia Generating Station. Mr. Meanser's phone number. Actually, I'm going to ask Jill's if she can put it in the comments, his phone number. Until we get the Columbia Generating Station, I'm going to give you a specific statement to say to them, in case you don't have any way to put it, and his phone number, and call him once a week. We urgently need the Columbia Generating Station to be shut down. They're calling New York, America's Fukushima. Wait till Columbia Generating Station has an earthquake of 6.2. 6.7, maybe a 7.0, which normal circumstances this environment could survive. Even Portland would rock and roll at 7.2, 7.7. We'd see big gaps, but we wouldn't see a catastrophic event, except for the fact that we have a nuclear power plant sitting on top of earthquake faults, which it might start there, but no doubt will be affected by this. And that plant will rock and roll and blow up and have a meltdown, and no one will get into Hanford for 2 weeks. And then while we're not there for 2 weeks, it's going to go bye-bye, kablooey. We are going to have a blast like nobody knows. And then it's going to be on fire like nobody can stop, just like Fukushima. You think Fukushima's bad? This stuff is one of the hugest reserves. Plutonium is here all over the place. The tanks they had were outrageous. They used to have them right on the river. I'll get Chuck Johnson to talk about this. He has a great presentation he goes around giving to, I don't know, mayors and things like that, to try to get them to understand. I think they understand, but it's so catastrophic. So these are some of the questions at Hanford. I thought I'd just go to the frequently asked, the leaking underground tanks at Hanford. So this is really some of the big problems right here, where you have a leaking tank at Hanford. How many tanks are leaking, and when did they start? One double shell tank, which, as Donna Gilmore has told us, is really only, 3/8 of an inch thick. So there's two shells, 3/8 of an inch thick. DSTAY-102, that's the identity of it, was first reported to be leaking in October 2012. First reported. Waste is leaking into the space between the waste tank and the inner shell of the double shell tank, the secondary containment shell. So there's waste, and these things corrode after start corroding and leaking after 20 years. This space, called the annulus, was designed to contain leaks. The settlement agreement in 2014 determined the time frame to start and complete tank retrieval. So do they just say how? Oh, note that 67 tanks leaked at least 1 million gallons in the past. Oh my God. I'm reading this, if you cannot tell, for the first time here. I found these links, but I wanted to actually read them with you. I cannot believe this. 67 tanks, at least 1 million gallons of nuclear waste. You think that the Northwest is, they've been frying us. It's going all over. What's the threat to public health? Gee, now they're going to tell us there's no immediate or near-term health risks are associated with Hanford's leaking leaks. You notice they say no immediate or near-term because it takes 10 to 20 years for the symptoms to pop up. And then you know what their response is? Well, at least you've had a good life. You've been able to live 20, 30 years. So what's your complaint? Why do you expect to live longer than that? That's fine. And then when you get sick, they're like, well, the good part is when you get sick from nuclear, usually you die pretty quickly when the symptoms get really bad. Like, really? That's their response? To let you die in misery. There is no route for the leaked waste to travel from the Hanford site to agricultural areas. So there's no risk to food crop contamination because really it doesn't dry and blow everywhere. It's just, don't worry. It's not anywhere. Hanford's groundwater is up to 200 to 300 feet below the tanks. So the new leaks will take decades to reach it. Decades. It's actually a lie. That's the big concern out there. They have discovered this waste is traveling. You know why it's traveling faster? Because it's been leaking way longer. They never even looked for it. They said they found it in October 2013. Oh, first reported in February 2013. These people, 67 tanks leaked at least 1 million gallons in the past. Really? We have to remember the 90% rule, folks. John Goffman studied it and said they report only 10% of the harm that they cause. They only report 10%, and they immediately deny radiation causes harm to human health. No immediate threat to near-term health risks are associated with Hanford's leaks. Did they say after this, though? Long-term effects are cancer, child mutation, childbirth defects. I mean, they know for every million people with two rads in the air, we're going to get 225,000 birth defects a year. Let's just don't even talk the cancer. What about birth defects? To sentence children to a lifetime of birth defects and their families is just outrageous. The groundwater pump and treat facilities at the center of Hanford are keeping the majority of pre-existing groundwater contamination from moving towards the Columbia River. So what would happen here if we have an earthquake? Exactly. Bye-bye Columbia River. Bye-bye Pacific Ocean. You and Fukushima get to marry. Yippee! This is so outrageous. These people are, I mean, honestly, I do not know why people do not take this stuff seriously. They are literally killing us and our children. What are the options for dealing with leaking tanks? This is their website, people. This is what we pay our government to write up. Hold on just a second. I'm going to take a sip of coffee. Okay. I think I missed it. What are the options for dealing with the leaking tanks? The single shell tanks are all unfit for use and decades past their life design. This is on the government webpage. It would be impossible to repair and upgrade the SSTs to meet current regulatory standards. Some options are addressing leaks are, meaning this shit is falling apart and it is going everywhere. That, excuse my language, but that's exactly what, just what do they call this out at Bridgeton, the smoldering event? It's not going to stop until it decides to put itself out. Hello. Wow. Increased monitoring and sampling. Really? Developing new retrieval technologies. Construct surface barriers over SST farms. In 2008, an interim barrier. They put a fence around it. And I think what they're doing actually is they're digging underground. I've seen like little pictures. They're trying to dig underground and encapsulate the dirt, but far enough, but they're not having any trouble because they're hitting the groundwater because they're complete dumbasses. These people, I mean, honestly, we have been sold down the river and we need to give them some. I believe if we're going to have the scientists come forward, we're going to not have to prosecute some of them, man. But the heads of state, yeah, they deserve to go to jail. To protect against precipitation entering the tanks and to keep that precipitation from pushing contaminants closer to the groundwater. Patty Murray knows about this. Construction of additional barriers is a possible solution to slow the spread of leak tank waste. Patty Murray, Senator Patty Murray's father, worked at Hanford. She was the senator who really pushed to make Hanford a national monument because, as she correctly stated, it has changed the course of our country. It is not a national monument, however, it is a national disgrace that our Congress would actually deem this place a national monument. You know why she did that? For extra money. Because the government is refusing to admit that this stuff is killing the planet and they're refusing to stop funding wars and selling weapons to every planet. Every single filthy, dirty little place on this planet has our weapons. And it has got to stop. We need to send our money here and spend it on how do we deal with this and stop the lies. And that is what we want to hear Helen Caldicott say. I do not have the academic credibility behind me. In fact, a lot of people probably think I'm a lunatic raving liberal, which, yeah. I mean, I'm not a lunatic, but I'm not raving. I actually make a lot of sense, but I am dumbfoundedly angry. This is so outrageous that we are spending 51 cents of every dollar to military. We are the one of the behind Sweden, we are the largest arms seller in the world. We don't have industry because we make weapons. We make war. And what do you think they're doing out in North Dakota? They turn it on us, folks. And if we don't get our senators, we just elected a bunch of people who want. We have no idea. The only reason I want a recount is to stop that war machine. Many people go, oh, we stopped the war machine with Hillary Clinton. No, we just delayed it, folks. We delayed it. They're going to ramp it up. They're going to shove it down our throats. They're going to have our kids, I mean, in war machines in 3 to 4 years. And everybody will be going, great. Because that's going to be the solution after they tank the economy, which is their status quo. Wow. How are the tanks? You know what the problem with this is? We are not going to survive this. We cannot ignore what's going on in Hanford. This is plutonium. This is extremely dangerous, which means we need to call the Bonneville Power Station and just say, you know what? We need to close down the Columbia Generating Station immediately. It's an emergency. The earthquake faults are moving up and down. If we have an earthquake underneath there, and it is sitting on an earthquake fault, and remind them that. Look, we know it's sitting on an earthquake fault. Earthquakes are starting to rock and roll all up and down the West Coast. You guys haven't had one there. If it rocks, it will not survive, and they need to know that. And I am adamant about this. Look, Bridgeton was not, nobody didn't know, even know. They were lied to by our government. That's what makes this the number one story of our country. The whole people in St. Louis, out there by St. Louis, that whole area, in fact, downwind, think of all the floods that's gone on down there. Think of what they've done to our groundwater. Why is New Orleans like the number one cancer? I mean, we need to take a look at our, birth defects. It's just sickening. This is the betrayal of St. Louis is a sad story. And to give 34 families a settlement is an outrage. They should be evacuating every family, compensating them for their houses, making their lives better, and apologizing. Every single family there at the cost, just take it straight out of the military. Close down a base. Cut off one day of aid to Israel. How about that? Or to Saudi Arabia, for that matter. I mean, honestly, we have our priorities wrong, folks. And these are the kind of things we can call up and demand. Bridgeton and St. Louis, the whole area, they deserve to be evacuated. They're properly compensated, not just, you know, it's painful to listen to this. So I'm going to, okay, so I'm going to, in the deference to time here, it's 8:26. I'm going to stop, but I do encourage people to come to this website, Department of Ecology, State of Washington, Nuclear Waste, and read. There are 10 things here. Just listen to what they're actually telling us, what they're telling us. They're smiling while they're stabbing us in the back. And the elected officials like Patty Murray, Ron Wyden, I know Jeff Merkley has worked very hard to stop this. He's the one person on the right side of the fence here. Maria Cantwell, she's the other senator in Washington. So we have two women senators, Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray, and they are both pro-nuclear because it brings about $80 million into their state every year. But it has got to stop. We have got to stop it, and we need to demand money for this, the nuclear waste remediation. 67 tanks have already leaked. They say it on their first page when you click under the question. 67 tanks leaked at least 1 million gallons in the past. At least 1 million. So take Dr. John Goffman's thing. What's that, 10 million gallons in the past? My gosh. So people need to actually take action. I'm just going to encourage you to please take action. Okay, I'm going to go on to another story that is really hard for me to read because my brother got cancer about 8 months after the whip blew up. And when I found out he had cancer, I said to him, don't you think it's related to the whip? Why don't you get your body tested to see what your radiation levels are? He's like, no, no, no. I've just been smoking cigarettes all my life. He got completely insulted. It was as if I had told him he had, you know, what do they call that? Leprosy. And that's the weird thing about nuclear. Look at what's happened to the children in Japan. They're being harassed and bullied. So I'm going to move on. DOE begins operational readiness. This is a very current one, then, though. WIPP update. Waste isolation pilot plant recovery. Energy.gov. WIPP update, November 2016. The final operational readiness review, which was necessary to ensure the waste isolation pilot plant, WIPP, can safely return to waste in placement operations, started this week. The Department of Energy, DOE, Operational Readiness Review, DORR, team is comprised of 19 subject matter experts from around the DOE complex who were selected on their relevant experience in nuclear operations, engineering, and safety management. Speaking of safety management, I read quite a boring scientific paper on safety management at in the nuclear industry. It has never been tested. They're operating, and when it did get tested empirically with a nuclear power plant in Spain, only there were 7 components, only one of them functioned, and only at less than 50%. So you want to know why we had over probably 10 million gallons? They admit to 1 million gallons out of 67 tanks. So let me get back to this. The team arrived on site Monday and began a 2-week review process that focuses on demonstration of proficiency in receipt and handling of contact-handled transuranic waste, TRU, systems maintenance and operations, and fire safety, radiological controls, emergency management, and other safety programs. The DORR team will take approximately 2 weeks to observe operations and conduct the necessary personnel interviews and document reviews to ensure quality of operations. A closeout meeting and a final report are planned in early December. This is a little different than previous operational readiness reviews in that the federal employees at the Carlsbad Field Office are also being evaluated along with the contractor. So this is the first time they've evaluated the contractor. This is an important review and the last hurdle we need to cross before declaring the facility is ready to resume transuranic waste operations, said Todd Schrader, manager CBFO, who oversees WIPP. Todd Schrader oversees WIPP. Let me write that down. Todd Schrader, T-O-D-D. S-H-R-A-D-E-R. He is the manager of CBFO. Okay. This is an important review and the last hurdle we need to cross before declaring the facility is ready to resume transuranic waste operations. Once the DORR is completed and corrective actions for any pre-start findings have been developed, implemented, and validated, authorization to commence waste emplacement will be declared. Well, I wonder when that is going to happen, sir. In conjunction with the DOE, the New Mexico Environment Department will perform a site inspection to ensure WIPP as in a full compliance with its hazardous waste permit, facility permit, and administrative orders. Successful completion of all the assessments and reviews, as well as associated corrective actions, will ensure the WIPP plant, people, and processes are ready for the safe and compliant resumption of waste emplacement activities. Wow. So if anybody wants to go, there is a meeting next WIPP Town Hall meeting December 8th. The City of Carlsbad and DOE co-host Town Hall meetings to provide updates on the WIPP recovery and restart activities, just like they do in St. Louis. The next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, December 8th at 5:30 p.m. Location, Carlsbad City Council Chambers, 101 Jalagueno Street. This meeting is a special town hall focused on mining and ground control at the WIPP site. So WIPP meetings are live streamed at, and then they have the link there. So that is the update on that. They're giving us now, are they telling us actually when? No, they're not saying. They didn't, that's like, tell us something we don't know. You'll fix it when it gets all done. Is once the DORR is completed and corrective actions for any pre-start findings have been developed. Wow, folks. So the contamination continues. I mean, most people will say that what's gone on at the WIPP is still an ongoing catastrophe. Now, the next story I pulled together was, as we know, New York City is what they're calling America's next Fukushima. This is, let me see if I can get the story who it's by. This is a story at the National Geographic. And this says, Fukushima in New York, this nuclear power plant has some regulators nervous. A new documentary explores the fight around Indian Point Energy Center in the wake of Japan's 2011 nuclear disaster. Let's see, the date was July 29th, 2016. Here we are. Could what happened to Fukushima happen 35 miles north of New York City? That's 56 kilometers, he has that in parentheses. That's what many activists and former nuclear regulators fear for the Indian Point Energy Center, a nuclear power plant that has operated in Westchester County for more than four decades. So I hope Jules is listening to this, because this is in her neck of the woods. The plant provides a good chunk of energy needs, excuse me, the plant provides a good chunk of energy needs for the surrounding area, but it has come under fire in recent years for safety and environmental concerns, including its warming of the Hudson River and a recent case of bolts missing in one of its reactors. Bolts are missing, folks. The plant's two working reactor units are currently operating on expired licenses, with the state of New York having denied parent company Entergy's water permits due to suspected violations of the Federal Clean Water Act. You know what that means? Bolts missing, two reactor units operating. This means that this stuff has been going right into the Hudson River. The warming, that includes its warming. It's warming, wow. And they're still allowed to go. Following the 2011 earthquake and tsunami that caused catastrophic damage to Fukushima's Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant and surrounding areas, the safety of nuclear energy as a whole has come under even greater scrutiny. In the new documentary, Indian Point, currently in select theaters, filmmaker Ivy Meerpol uses the plant to get into both sides of the nuclear debate. Meerpol, who is also a director on an upcoming second season of National Geographic series, Years of Living Dangerously, tour both Indian Point and Fukushima. She profiles plant workers and executives. Entergy cooperated with the film, along with anti-nuclear activists, environmental nonprofits, and the former chairman of the U.S. Regulatory Commission, Gregory Jasko. Wow. I like Gregory Jasko. He's like, he has stuck to the point, but they have sure silenced all those people. Though she says seeing the inner workings of the plant was, quote, reassuring, unquote, Meerpol still found many details disturbing. All these people who work in the nuclear power plant, basically their main job is to make sure nothing goes terribly wrong, she says. I think if people are going into Fukushima and coming out and believing it's real, I think they get drugged before they go in there. I think they are not going into a repaired nuclear power plant. I think they are being brought into something that is made to look real, and they are under some form of, I just don't believe that it's, they have fixed it like they say. That is at the heart of what Helen Caldicott does. Now, back to the story. Meerpol spoke to the National Geographic about her journey into the central reactor of the nuclear debate, why nuclear puts aquatic wildlife in danger, and just how scared New Yorkers should be about Indian Point. Describe the experience you had in stepping into Indian Point for the first time with your camera. The first time the owner of For the first time, the owners of Indian Point were allowing me to film a typical tour that school groups can go into, or politicians. It's a very controlled situation where they bring you to just a few parts of the plants. You do not go into the radioactive side. Gee, you're already in the radioactive side. There wasn't really what I was looking for. As a documentary, let me increase this one. There we go. Sorry about that, folks. I increased the screen font because the story got smaller. That wasn't what I was looking for. As a documentary filmmaker, you want to go deeper. You want to access areas that's not anyone can typically see. After that, I kept pushing, calling the communications department. I really want you to introduce me to someone who's been working there for a long time. So this is a pro-propaganda nuclear thing. Because I'm going to move on. You guys, as I'm even reading forward, she traveled to Fukushima. She thinks she got into that nuclear power plant. So to me, that just loses all credibility. They're not even talking about it. The fact that there's no repository for this stuff is just piling up on plants around the country. It's really disconcerting. The fact that this woman is not now a super active anti-nuke activist makes me not want to read the story. So I'm going to move on, because telling me she got in to see Fukushima and believing what they told her that she saw and now she feels better is propaganda, because Fukushima is a mess. So then I want to talk about the two where they're not even attempting to lie. In Illinois, this one really goaded me. I think I read a story about it. So it's 8:39. After this, I'm going to encourage people to give me a call when I'm finished reading this. If you want to call and respond, if anybody who's actually listening wants to talk to me right now, you can give me a call. But let me finish a story about what's going on at Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. Wow. This is a blog. And where's the story on? They took it. It changed out in the hour that we've been reading. Let me see if we can go back to that. On life near two nuclear power plants in Illinois, an interview with Cindy and Joe Sauer, S-A-U-E-R. There's a download presentation. You can get a PDF or you can purchase a copy of it's called What Do You See When You Look at Me? Written and photographed by Sarah E. Sauer. The introduction. There are two reactors at the Bradenwood and Dresden nuclear power plants in Illinois. Bradenwood has two Westinghouse pressurized reactors that were commissioned in 1988 with a total combined power rating of 2,330 megawatts. Dresden has three General Electric boiling reactors with a design of a similar design to the stricken reactors at Fukushima Daiichi in Japan. Unit 1 was a small unit of 210 megawatts commissioned in 1960. It was shut in 1978 and decommissioned. Unit 2 and 3 are rated at 867 megawatts each and are still operational. They were commissioned in 1970 and 71, respectively. They have had their licenses extended for 20 years beyond the initial 40 years. The current schedule for closure is December 2029 for Unit 2 and January 31st for Unit 3. The Braden and Dresden nuclear power plants have leaked tritium in the form of radioactive water into the environment. Cindy and Gerald Sauer lived in the area of these reactors from 1998 to 2004. Subsequently to their finding of tritium leaks and contamination and that many children in the area had cancer, brain cancer, leukemia, they moved away from the area. Their daughter Sarah was diagnosed with brain cancer when she was 7. A statement from her is at the end of this interview. So, wow. Do I have time to read portions of it? Yes, I do. So let me give you the phone number if anybody wants to call in. The phone number is 718-717-8296. Let me go to the Westlake landfill first before, because I don't know if anybody will call in. I still go back to this. This whole thing is so outrageous that we have been lied to so tremendously and still continue. They still... You know, the weird part is, look at the Hanford site. They're not lying to us. They have spilled over 10 million, 100 million, 1 million gallons is enough. I mean, this is so outrageous. America's Chernobyl. I wonder what this is about. Westlake Landfill. Yeah, I bet this is about, here's America's Chernobyl. What is this saying? America's Chernobyl, inside the most toxic place in the nation. So where is that? Oh, they're saying it is the WIPP. So I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, it's like, who wants that title? The people of New York, New York, they haven't even seen the beginning of it. But actually, I don't even think they're counting. Tritium has been leaking. One of the first articles I read on this radio show was about the tritium. Ironically, it was the University of Illinois who found it, and probably they were studying it because they were commissioned to find tritium everywhere. Let's just look for it everywhere since it's right here in Illinois. We have these two nuke plants leaking here, so let's just see if we can find it everywhere, and then we can say, see, it's not so bad. 6 million people across America have leaking tritium in their water. That was on the Business Insider. I must have read it on the show 5 or 6 times. I was dumbfounded. So I've been on the radio now for over a year, folks, and I have to say it's interesting because people who listen to the radio show are interested in nuclear, but they take it in bits. Nobody can just listen to it. This is why I attempt to have interviews and people talking to make it real. And I want all sides. And I'm actually going to ask Dr. Caldicott, I'm going to send her a copy of Dana's video and have a real conversation. I think it needs, I want to know why the standard, the quote, scientists are ignoring the facts and the alternative people when, and not have engaging in real conversation instead of just saying, oh, well, they're left-wing lunatics because people cuss. So I don't get it. I do not get the way, if they think they're helping us by being, what do we call them, compliant with the industry and willing to take their pack of lies, they are packing our nuclear waste in half-inch tanks that leak in 20 years because they're cheaper, folks. That's the reason. It has nothing to do. So here we go. Here's a story. I'm going to read this. This is actually pretty good because they met with, I always love this when they meet with, I hope it's not a, it is. Channel News 5 does a, and they're not giving us the dialogue. The moms meet, I don't think they'll give us the story. You have to watch a video. Moms meet with the head of the EPA about the landfill. More meetings, more meetings. I still think people need to be camping out on the governor's lawn. Period, saying, you know what, we're not going home till you fix this because this is outrageous. I mean, it is so outrageous. Anyways, there isn't really a current story. Let's see. What did Don Chapman? This was from April 26th. So this is how Facebook gets to filter what we say. They can put on my, like they put on a feed on my news feed on. It's not, it's called Face Track for a reason. But these women, it's one of the few places where we can get it, get information from Westlake because they connect on Facebook. So Kevin Blanch actually talked me into going back on Facebook. I gave up on it. I used to have a page called Nuts for Art. I had my YouTube channel and I had my Facebook page all have the same name, and I kept posting Kevin's video on my Facebook page and all the nuclear stories and all the things about Fukushima. And I didn't talk about my family, but I had a bunch of like really great contacts, and it was really interesting. I logged in one day and I got a letter saying that I they noticed that I was no warning. They noticed that I was advocating for a cause, so they turned me into a page, Nuts for Art, which I have. Basically, I didn't delete it, but I have left it inactive. And all of my contacts that I had developed went away, all of them. And that's what Facebook does. And I don't know, we are headed into a pretty interesting time right now, folks. We're living through it. I heard somebody say, well, we averted World War III. I think we're in World War III. I mean, we literally have the nuclear industry passively murdering people, creating a war on us, not telling us jack about the harm that they're causing us. And children are getting cancer. This family that lived in Illinois right next to these nuclear power plants, I mean, look what happened to them. I mean, we know the story. We don't really have to finish the rest of the story. They lived there. They were told it was all safe, And stories of the Department of Illinois saying, no, they're not going to give us information. Cindy and Joe, Illinois Department of Public Health has cancer data set which available to the public. It is grouped in 5-year intervals, and the cancers are categorized in 4 age groups and 10 cancer types. The grouping of cancers in these categories limits the ability to analyze the impact of the leaks on the cancer incidence. For example, thyroid cancer is lumped up with the other category. We therefore asked the access of the original data set. We were told that that would be a Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act violation, and it would allow identification of individual cases. This was despite the fact that we told them we could remove any personal identifying data and that I would sign an a HIPAA agreement. IDPH even refused to release the data when requested by then Senator Obama's office. So Senator Obama has known about this and how they play a long time. And we were shocked that he screwed us when Fukushima happened. They probably picked him knowing that it was about to happen. I don't know about you folks, but do you feel betrayed by the end of this hour? I'm sorry to have beaten you up like this. I just thought it was really important that we, like, these are the five I picked on the top of my head. To be frank, I'm on 5 days a week now. I still want to interview on Wednesdays to keep that pattern, but I need to be flexible. I want to be flexible. And I've been attempting to have someone on more frequently. But it's finals, and I have not had a chance to talk to anybody, and my final is next Thursday, so it's going to be hit and miss for the next week, and then after that, I really want to bring people on, and I'm going to be reading stories, I think I'm going to expand it, not just the nuclear, because as we're discovering about the nuclear industry, it uses a lot of other chemicals, and the nuclear industry trashes those chemicals, too. I mean, they don't just dispose of the nuclear waste in a disrespectful manner to humanity and to our planet. They just are like two-year-olds just smearing shit on the walls. I mean, honestly, they are out of control, and we are actually suffering the toxic effects of it. This is why it's hard to read these interviews with these families. We know the story. And this lady in New York saying, well, the regulators are nervous. You think? The plant is leaking contaminated waste into the Hudson River to the point where it's warmed it. There are bolts missing on a nuclear reactor. It's a matter of time when that thing just goes kablooey. There's bolts. They know it's going to happen, and it's on top of rising oceans. So this, I don't know. This is where you have to really rely on your inner gut and understand that, you know what? Whatever it is, it's going to be what it is. And in the meantime, we can still be happy. I really believe that happiness is resistance. They want us to be despondent and not figure it out. And, oh, my God, it's so horrible. No, we need to face this, and we need to demand that these people like Elliot Menzer up at the power plant, Bonneville Power Plant in Seattle. We have to call them very regularly. I'm not going to give his number out today and give them a break, but it will be in the links here, and we need to call them. And I'm actually going to call. I mean, there are things that we need to do, like the Columbia Generating Station needs to be shut down immediately. The risk to Hanford is beyond, after reading this today, it's like put a new fire in under me. This 67 tanks leaked 1 million gallons in the past, which means it's still dormant, still sitting there. If we have any kind of a fire, and actually we do have fires out there, and Mimi Gurman told me that she believes, many of the activists believe that they actually set them off to burn up the leaks to the gallons of leaking contamination, which means they just put it in the air. I mean, what's the difference? We've got Fukushima going on. So it's completely outrageous. I don't know. I'm going to keep going, folks. Let me go back to this Westlake Landfill page, and I'm going to see. Let me give you the number. It's 718-717-8296. The Missouri Attorney General. The Attorney General serves as the legal chief officer for the state of Missouri as mandated by our Constitution. So this is actually really good. I believe that Chris Koster won, and that is going to positively impact. In fact, I still think that these people should be parking themselves on the governor's lawn. That's what I'd do if I lived in St. Louis. I'd be going to work from there. Attorney General Chris Koster released the following statement on today's United States District Court ruling, remanding the case against Bridge and Landfill and Republic Services to the St. Louis County Circuit Court. This is on April 26, 2016. So this is still where it goes. Republic's delaying tactics of removing the case to federal court have failed. Our case is seeking penalties for violating state environmental laws, which will now proceed to state court in St. Louis County, where it belongs. Wow. So this is an old, let's see if they, I don't think they give us the rest of the story because it's so old that the archives don't talk about it. That's at MissouriState.gov. So if you want to dig around at Missouri.gov and type in Chris Koster, you can type in Republic Services to get a full venue of what they're doing out there and the way they're twisting it all about. It's unconscionable. The people in St. Louis need to be evacuated and remediated 100%, double percent of what they have there. They really are living. We many of the people don't want to move away. They want this place remediated, and it can be pretty much remediated. And that's true. So if they want to live there under those risks with some contamination risk, I wouldn't. I'd want to be moved away. But if you want to live there. I mean, think of the jobs that we could create if we could really get a good remediation, like boom, spent boatloads of money fixing all these hideous eyesores that we have. Like what happened in my little neck of the woods in Redondo Beach. I mean, when I read that story on the from the EPA that they knew there was contaminants that caused the exact symptoms I would get every time I went in the ocean, right there. And I never heard one thing about it. I lived in that community for 6 years. Not one thing. There was nothing posted. I used to go for a walk every day. And then the last 2 years I lived there, oh my God, if I walked on the sand, my feet would itch so bad. And if I went into the water, I would get so sick. It was from chemical poisoning. So this is kind of, I'm going to keep talking. Jules tells me that we're off at us.